I'm going to call the this meeting of the Ways and Means Subcommittee for Information Technology Committee to order. What have we got going on today, Sean?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, for today, we're lucky to have the state CIO, Dr. Alex Pettit, and the Director of DAS and Chief Operating Officer for State Government, Michael Jordan, here to give the committee an overview of state IT, of the state IT environment. And I think we have a presentation, certainly some additional handouts for the committee members.
Great. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here and giving us this presentation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Jordan. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services and the chief operating officer for the state. We're here, I understand, for a couple of different sessions to kind of give a broad overview of things. Mr. Pettit is certainly the star of the show. I'm here basically to give you a bit of context on where we are in managing the executive branch right now and some of the things we've done in the last couple of years to be kind of a roadmap for you for a number of things Mr. Pettit's going to mention in his presentation, and I want you to kind of be oriented to how we're doing things and some roles and responsibilities that we're using right now. I want to start, though, with something we did, and I probably should apologize a bit in advance to Senator Whitsitt. He, some of my remarks he will have heard multiple times in general government sub when we talk about some of the things we're doing, so my apologies to him. But for the rest of the committee, I think this will be new information. In 2011, when I started with the state, it was clear to me that we had a very fragmented management structure, and we needed to find a way to bring agency leadership together to start to think about how does the enterprise of state government work, and how can it work better, and how can we collectively make decisions that impact the way we do business. And so I brought together something that will be referred to called the Enterprise Leadership Team. It is 20 agency heads from across the different policy areas of state government, large and small agency representation, along with the deputies of the four statewide electeds. And those 24 folks, basically for the last 3 or 4 years, have been practicing shared leadership and group decision making about what affects state government. So you're going to hear about that entity. I should refer, you have before you, I know these are up on OLIS now, but you have a hard copy at your desk about kind of these enterprise governance pieces along with DAS governance. And I wanted to mention a few things on these charts so that you'll have an orientation when they come up in our presentation. So the first one, again, the Enterprise Leadership Team. And as you can see on the enterprise side of the governance, it's at the center of the chart. You obviously see the governor and my position along with the state CIO, which, by the way, since last long session in 2013, is now a direct appointment by the governor, the state CIO is, and has his own set of statutory authorities over technology services. The reason you see these terms in here called delegated authority, I want to be very clear. Those are terms regarding the engagement we are attempting to do with the entirety of the executive branch and trying to force collective decision-making across the branches. It is in no way to indicate that the statutory authority of the positions that are on this chart, CIO, COO, DAS director, et cetera, we are not implying that those authorities have been delegated to others. They still lie, and the accountability still lies with those positions. But it is indicative of the way we're trying to engage across the enterprise to do collective decision-making. On that enterprise side of the chart, you'll also see that ELT, the Enterprise Leadership Team, has two basically subcommittees. One has been around for quite a while, the Improving Government Steering Team in green there. That's a group that basically has been delegated from the Enterprise team to be the nuts and bolts people that actually run projects to improve processes in state government. So we've done improvement projects on the way we lease property. We've done projects on our payroll system, on our procurement system, et cetera. Very project-oriented folks to get stuff done. The other one in the orange is new. We've just created in the last 2 years the Enterprise IT Governance Group. The delegation there is that that's a group made up of both business and technology folks from across state agencies. They are there to work with the state CIO regarding technology issues, whether they're, and you're going to hear a lot today about how we manage projects, how we deliver service inside state government, technology services, and kind of his rump group, if you will, and feeding into the Enterprise Leadership Team, looking forward, where are we going with technology, and really that kind of collective brain trust to work with the state CIO. That's kind of how we are trying to deal with the enterprise. I wanted to note one part of the DAS governance piece, and that's the one that's labeled CUBS on the far right side of the chart. Those are customer boards that we created at DAS to help us really create a much stronger, closer relationship with our customers. Those boards have been chartered to both set the rates for DAS services and to enter into service level agreements with the administrators of our services at DAS. They are unique to DAS regarding service levels, but the operative customer board for our discussion today will be the ETS customer board, Enterprise Technology Services Board, and you'll hear them referred to at different parts of the discussion. So I wanted to kind of give you a layout of a way we're trying to do business here. The other thing I wanted to mention, which is just lead up to where we are today. How did we get to where we are today regarding what we're trying to do with technology? And I go back to a report and a study we did with an outside consulting firm called the Hackett Group back in 2012. We actually finished the report in December of 2012. We presented it to the General Government Ways and Means Committee Subcommittee during the 13th session. There are a few storylines in that report that are really important here. It was the first comprehensive look across the executive branch of our internal service delivery, HR, IT, finance and budget, and procurement. And we did a very extensive deep dive into those costs, personnel, structure, customer service. And we took all of that data and benchmarked Oregon against 14 other states, peer states, and what Hackett considers world-class organizations. They have a matrix of efficiency and effectiveness that they use against all their clients, public and private, that they, if people can score on those matrices, they consider them world-class. So we benchmarked ourselves against peer states and world-class organizations in those areas of service. Here's the storyline. Storyline is all things lead through technology for us on those internal service delivery mechanisms. And when you look at technology, our biggest challenge at the very beginning was all things had to start with governance. I was fond of telling people 2 years ago we didn't even have a way of making a bad decision enterprise-wide. We didn't have mechanisms in place to make decisions for the entire enterprise. So we've worked really hard in the last couple of years to put that venue in place. That's what you see on the chart. It is now the accepted venue for the executive branch to be looking at how we make executive branch decisions. Alex, in his presentation, will talk about how we are actuating that process on the ground with agencies right now, and we've got some asks in front of Ways and Means General Government to try and further that actuation on the ground. With that, I think I'll shut up right now and go into my role of being translator of Oklahoman to Oregonian, in case Alex can't, and try to help with any questions you might have and turn it over to Alex with your permission, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Well, thank you. My name is Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the State of Oregon. I've been here about a year now, and a lot of things that you're going to see today are things that I've been working on, and one of the, I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, we've managed to accomplish a number of things in a relatively short amount of time, about 12 months. On the other hand, it seems like there's a lot more work to be done, and we haven't done as much as I would have hoped to have done at this point. I had a short assignment in another agency there for a while unexpectedly, so that was part of my onboarding process. So with that, as I go through this, if there are questions, if there are things I don't say or explain very clearly, please go ahead and stop me. It's my fault for not being able to articulate it in a way that communicates. I'm going to try very hard to give a general context, and then as we go forward together in our meetings, get more and more granular detail. It's very important, I think, to have the frame in which the context, in which the detail makes sense, because otherwise it's very hard to appreciate the larger. This was my dissertation thesis. It's very hard to understand the out-of-context, the narrow requirements, unless you understand the overall scope requirements, the larger context for what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm going to start with the larger. I'm going to drill down to the smaller. That's really pretty much what we're here for. All right, so one of the things that we try to do is one of the reasons why we have governance is if you look at the state of Oregon systems as they exist today, and I'm talking about the 12 or so what we call the core systems or the legacy systems or any of the systems, even those systems that manage Medicaid or manage the DCBS licensing or the manage that whatever the agency or the organization or the collective good is, they start off with a plan of some sort, and they say what are their requirements, and then they develop these systems, particularly for shared systems, our human resources information systems, our system of PPDB and PICS, our systems for accounting, our systems for procurement. All of these systems started out with a shared set of requirements that we could all agree upon. This is what we wanted it to do. And then we come up with 12 systems that we say, yep, this is what we want to do. Well, over time, these systems kind of stray, and we make modifications based upon what one person needs or somebody else needs or the law changes. And in addition to that, for those things that we don't change for people collectively, they have to create shadow systems or systems to augment the core system so they can get out of it what they want. Some of these shadow systems may be things as simplistic as spreadsheets. Some of these are very sophisticated shadow systems, you know, full-blown Microsoft SQL things or whatever that they've had developed, custom developed. And they augment the core system to get it to do what they need it to do to meet a requirement or an audit finding or something like that. And so it's not that they do this because they want to. They do it because they have to. So what governance does is it's a way of taking these systems and these needs and making sure that we bring together what is supposed to be managed, what do we expect the agencies to do for themselves, what is it that the centralized solution is going to provide to them, and to continue that. So it's not just the frog leaping on the conveyor belt and then sitting for a long time until he's about to fall off and then leaping again, you know, that we actually stay up with the thing constantly. We don't let the thing stray. That's really what the difference is here. That's what I propose to you is the difference when we do things through a governance framework. And then additionally with using architecture, which is one of those things I'm going to talk about. So this is from Peter Will and Jeannie Ross. You know, they came up with enterprise architecture as strategy. And so IT governance can be viewed as a combination of three high-level aspects. You know, who will make the decisions, how will make the decisions be made, and what is the process? And then within the domain, what decisions must be made? So that's really what this is about. That's really what governance is about. If there's a linear differentiation between what we call IT governance and then project oversight, this is really it. Governance has the decision domains, the approaches to decision making, and the governance mechanisms. It's really to answer those four questions, though, is what governance is about. And IT governance is what I would I would provide is, or I would say is the thing that's different in this, and I'll be bringing forward the strategic plan to y'all to look at. We'll have hopefully conversation around that. That's really the thing that's different here is what we're trying to do is establish a framework for how decisions will be made in environments of uncertainty. So there's really not, and when I say there's no centralized IT governance model for aligning IT service delivery activities across the state. Right now, agencies still make decisions for themselves for what they think is in their best decision without a good governance process in place yet. It's not mature enough yet to say this is how we're going to make a decision. Is something bespoke to or unique to an agency? I use the word bespoke a lot. Is it unique to an agency, or is it something that's shared, or is it something that's utility? That we all should be using the same thing for. So that differentiation is something we haven't got yet. I'm not going to read the entire slide to you here, but that's kind of where we're at right now. The vision for the future is we're going to try to align state IT expenditures and services to optimize service costs, to give the best service at the lowest possible cost. We're entrusted with a responsible use of the state resources. So that's what we're doing here. Provide better return on state's IT investment, monitor architecture projects and process to increase business value. How are we going to get there? We have a roadmap to get there. Transition the state's fragmented governance models to phased implementation using the ELT model for governance. Michael talked about that just a minute ago. Integrating the existing initiative for statewide portfolio and project management shared service into the IT governance transition. So we came before eBoard 2 months ago. Gosh, it seems like longer than that, doesn't it? We came before eBoard 2 months ago to ask if we could get a limitation extension to bring in a project and portfolio management tool, a PPM tool, what we call. So that all the state's projects that have a major IT component to them can be tracked, can be viewed, can be seen, can be transparent to anyone that has any interest to it. As we did a very similar thing in Oklahoma. That's one of those things that we're lacking here. That's one of the things that we're standing up right now. We're in the process of bringing live, and we've had our struggles with that. That's our procurement struggles we've been having, but that's not project struggles. Well, we're really optimistic about bringing this up because it does improve transparency as well as really the quality of the project itself. So, all right, so. There's actually, this is really based upon something we call ITIL, the IT Infrastructure Library. So you've got consult, design, build, and run. That's all we do as geeks, all right? That's what we do. We either you're either designing, consulting on figuring out what somebody needs, getting the requirements. We're designing the solution of what it is that's going to do it. We're building it, or we're running it. Okay, that's it. That's all we do as IT people. It's as simple as those four things. Well, my office does three of those four things. All right, the operation, the optimizations, the running of the thing, that's done by ETS or by the agencies themselves or by somebody else. We just do the consult, the design, and the build. That's the authority that I have. That's my domain, if you will. And so to that, you'll see the consult and design is primarily the domain of what we call our strategic technology officers. Those are the folks that we've proposed. We have a pilot in place to do this, and the next slide will explain a little more what they are and what their specific domains are. But really, to gather the requirements, to find out what it is they're doing, to figure out is this really what they want, and then to oversee the design of it. Does the design actually meet the requirements of the state? Does it conform to our standards? Does it conform to our processes and what have you? A lot of those have yet to be defined. I'll get to that in a minute, and that's this year's body of work I got to do. But those are what the strategic technology officers exist for. There has not been a strategic technology officer prior to
last year.
It just didn't exist. On the other side of that, you've got what we call the stage gate process, and that's the systems development life cycle. That's what you have in front of you. We'll get into a lot of detail on that. It's also what we call a timing model. It says when things happen at what time. So That's one of 6 miles I got to kick out, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I've kicked out one so far. I've been here a year. I'm hoping it doesn't take me 5 more years to kick out the next 5.
Could I interject something,
yes,
Alex? I'd like to interject just a one thought here that is going to be a theme through everything. And that is, since we've started talking about IT governance and redoing, as Alex is talking about, the mantra is that the business leads the technology. We, and we're not unique, most organizations I know of are fond of picking technology to fix something that they think is a problem they have, or a vendor has told them they have a problem and this is your fix, and we buy it and we put it in place. We do it often without really understanding our business at a granular enough level that we really know what the problem is, our business problem to be solved. And I will tell you, a lot of what we're trying to put in place are resources and processes and controls which force us to think more succinctly and granularly about our business before we design a technology solution or buy a technology solution off the shelf. So that's a theme you're going to hear throughout this, and I just wanted to make sure we hit it hard at the beginning.
And that's a very good point. We're trying to move out of, so a fellow by the name of Levitt, who is a professor of organizational psychology, had written some time ago about his model of garbage can management, that all you have all of these different projects and needs and solutions swirling around in a garbage can, and whoever can best articulate it or whatever seems like the best thing, the easiest thing to do, that's the one we go with. There are a lot of solutions looking for problems in IT. There's a lot of things that are out there. Without being able to fully define the problem, we're jumping right to a solution. And in the one of the things that I hope we can talk about at some point is the whole process I'm trying to do to bring architecture in the state to stop us from jumping from the vision piece clear to the solution piece, going 1 to 6 without going through the process of figuring out really what it is that, what are we really trying to do and how are we trying to do it. So I'm getting a little off topic there, though. But
we got ahead, and I jumped you.
But so it's the what we call the analysts, the ITIP, the information technology investment portfolio analysts, are the ones that are the stage gate process managers. So they've got they get a little bit of the consult. We have, and this has historically been where we've been, you know, is a little bit of the consult, you know, the design and the build, and that's been where their focus has been. And we've got 5 of those right now. So, you know, that's 5 of them managing all the, you know, overseeing all the major projects of the state right now. So that's where we're at. You know, that's including me. So that's a lot of work for 5 folks to do. But anyway, so that's that. Now, on the front end of that, you see the IT governance process, enterprise governance process, and that's a subcomponent to the agency IT governance that you heard about earlier. And then we got the managed piece on the back end, you know, the enterprise portfolio, the shared services portfolio, and the agency portfolios. All right. So this is for IT, this is what our governance model is. Where does something fall? Does it fall as a utility? And a utility, what do we mean by utility? It means everybody uses it. It means the only differentiator is the price. There's no quality, you know, so now, if you all remember back in the day when Sprint had that advertisement for, you know, the pin drop, nobody changed their phone service because you could hear a pin drop over the phone. It was ridiculous. Dial tone is dial tone is dial tone. All right. It comes down to price. The quality is about availability. All right. That's it. It all comes out. So utility services are those things where you can't tell the difference on the thing. So when you store something on a disk array, a meg is a meg is a meg. You can't tell the difference between an IBM megabyte and an HP megabyte and a megabyte off a Hitachi system or whatever. They're all the same. Those are utility services. A ping is a ping is a ping. You don't know how you get to Google. You know, it's all the same to you. All you can tell is whether or not you got to Google or not. All of those utility services, and there's lots of them. We've identified 19 of them. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But those should be all one provider of them. Okay, they should all be uniform. It should be one provider, and they should be managed to the lowest possible cost for that service. The next level we have are the shared services. Those are the things that we have yet to define here. We've got a few of them out there. We, you know, the portal, the Oregon.gov is kind of a shared service we have. The mainframe is kind of a shared service we have. GIS is kind of a shared service we have. And we have done some work, but there are many, many more shared services. Rules engines could be services. We could all subscribe to the same rules engine. Case management in public safety. A case is a case is a case, you know, as it moves its way from Oregon, I'm going to say Highway Patrol, it's not right here, is it? Oregon State Police, all the way through to corrections to pardon and parole. That's not right either. That's Oklahoma as well. I don't know what it's called here. But as you move through, a case is a case is a case. That should be a shared service. And then there are those things that are truly unique to the agencies, those things that, that technology that really makes them more efficient and effective at what they do. Those are things that nobody else does. You know, nobody else does child support payments. Okay, so Department of Justice does child support payments. That's a unique, what I would call bespoke type solution. That's got to be custom made for that purpose. That's not going to be something that we can say is a shared service, and it's certainly not a utility. All right?
And if you see across the top, just under the names, Strategic Technology Office, one of the roles of those offices across the enterprise is to work with agencies and with the state CIO to elevate decisions about a particular application to know where it is in the hierarchy. Should we elevate it to the enterprise level and have an enterprise solution? Or when an agency says, I've got this problem, at least these offices who are in connection with each other can say, oh, we have three other agencies with exactly the same problem. They already have a solution. You shouldn't get a new one. Let's make it a shared service. So that's their, one of their jobs is to kind of be traffic cop with agencies.
And to find those opportunities for organizations to work together on a shared solution, whatever that is. And we've not had that before. I've heard stories here that we've had some agencies bring very similar solutions for approval for packages, and hey, why don't you all get together and work it out with each other and see how you can make these things into one? Well, that's going to be part of what this office is going to be charged with doing out of this. So all right, so this is a really busy slide, but it's not my busiest, fortunately. So there are six areas, what we call policy areas: public safety, human services, healthy environment, transportation, economic development, education, and then all the back office stuff. And within each of those policy areas, there are opportunities to identify shared services. There are opportunities to identify where we could have shared architecture, where we could have synergistic solutions. So the way that somebody defines a citizen in one area may be, so in order for interoperability to work, you got to come up with it. Words have to mean the same thing. A citizen to me has to mean a citizen to you, has to mean a citizen to somebody else. A word like citizen seems really simple. You know, we should all be able to, yeah, not so much when you get between. So to public safety, a citizen might have a very different meaning than to somebody in human services, right? And someone in human services might have a very different meaning than somebody in education. So these things don't always translate real well, you know, and it's very important that within the domain that they have a shared meaning, that they have a shared understanding or underlying definition of what that is. You cannot integrate the stuff in education if they don't all agree how we're going to identify a person and a student. You would think a student would be an easy one to keep track of. Not so much, you know. Some of the folks use Social Security number, you know, like universities and such. At least in Oklahoma, my experience was they used Social Security number to keep track of people in the University of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State University. K-12, they did not use Social Security number. They were precluded from using that. How would you make it so? Unemployment office, which was one of, you know, we wanted to know from effect of policy how it would affect things, you know, either citizen or if they were going to be go on to higher education, or if they were going to go on to the workforce, how something made a change. Well, you have to be able to associate people or things as they move through. If you can't do that, you can't know the effect of it. You know, you don't know if what you did made a difference. We've got to agree as to what that is within a domain. Otherwise, you don't have the interoperability. Otherwise, I can't communicate you made a change here. Well, here's what, you know, you wiggled this up here. How did it affect something over there? Or did it? So, all right, I've beaten that to death. Okay, so ELT, EITGS, delegated responsibility and authority. Michael talked about some of that. Agency CIO responsibility and authority, and then the Office of State CIO responsibility and authority. So all those are kind of laid out there, and that's really what we're hoping or what we're expecting or how we're I don't want to say promoting, but, you know, our view of the world. This is how we view the world. Does that make sense? It's how I view things. So I'll pause for a second there and see if anybody's got anything. Yes, sir.
I do. You sort of touched on it a little bit, I have particular concern about student records privacy.
Yes, sir.
And who has access to it, what it's being used for, who can go in and correct if there are errors that are on it. So at some point I'd like to talk with you at length about that. Actually, tomorrow I'll be presenting a couple of bills in front of the Education Committee related to, specifically to student records privacy. So that's just a concern, and a heads up there on that.
Co-Chair Nathan, Co-Chair Riley, Representative Frederick, thank you. Yes, that. And what I would submit to you, not to booger it up too much here, but what it comes down to is data sovereignty. Who has sovereignty over the data? Do I, as a student, give up rights at a certain point? Does the agency have certain sovereignty rights? And then we, as a state, do we have certain sovereignty rights? Do I surrender sovereignty rights simply by interacting with an educational institution to certain data? And in turn, does that educational institution, if they're supported by the state, do they also surrender certain types of rights, or are there certain rights that the state has to that data? And that's a very important discussion to have. Privacy is important, but I think sovereignty is going to be key.
Yes, okay. I agree with you on that. It is a significant concern to me about who third party access to this information, and I just worry about that. I have five bills that specifically deal with that. Four of them will be presented in Education Committee tomorrow, and one is part of another committee, and is the if you haven't taken a look at it, the California privacy bill. There are two versions, one in the House and one going through the House, one going through the Senate. We're tweaking it because of some of the changes that were made in LC regarding it, but we'll be talking about those issues in the next few weeks. So I'm glad to get chance to talk with you.
I'm sorry.
Chairman Riley, thank you. So, Mr. Pettit, thanks so far for your presentation. On slide six, you talk about your role. You don't have to go back, that's fine. But you talked about your role as consult, design, build, and then you turn it over to the agency, and they run they run with it. Then, how does production support fit into that? So, like a post-production release bug fix or a minor change to the software or something like that, where does that fit in? Do you start over and
design? So that's run, optimize, sustain. Generally speaking, that's done by Enterprise Technology Services, ETS. They're the largest provider of that. That's the state data center. It goes by a lot of different names. But it can be done by other providers or other folks. So you're talking about the difference between what's called an enhancement service request, or ESR, and a catalog service request, or CSR. And those are two different processes. And so right now, and there were some things that I wrote on that, we define those very clearly in Oklahoma. I've brought those here with me, and we're going through discussions on what those differences are now between those two things, but they are within that box that does not appear here, which is the run, optimize, sustain, because that is a normal process to that function. What I would submit to you, this is more for bringing in new things, for going back to that original the swirling diagram of the, you know, when we're bringing something new in and we're trying to figure out how do we automize or optimize something that's that or improve something like our HRIS, like our legacy systems, we'll go through the consult, design, build, run, optimize, sustain process. Only for things like that are that, I don't want to say revolutionary, but you know, that invasive or that's not a good word either, golly. You know,
is a good word.
Help me find a better word
new.
Than that. But new. Yeah, something that's new. Anything that's not that, those are those two processes within ITIL for managing run, optimize, sustain. So I have, you know, those if you, I'm sure you wouldn't care. It's a geek Thanks. Thing, but you know, yeah. Sorry.
So to follow up on what he was just asking, basically it'll depend on which level this is, who's
yes,
doing
sir.
The work, if it's enterprise, shared, or unique.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So.
That's absolutely correct. And that's very important. And thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the worst one that I got, the most complex one, because it is, we are going to use, we're starting a process of architecting the enterprise. And within the strategic plan, you'll see a big, long discussion around what this is, and I'll be presenting that soon. I just want to show this model to say there's actually four models of architecture, and the one I'm going to talk about is that blue one over on the right. There are six fundamental, what we call meta models, that inform what happens in the enterprise. There's a data model, there's a process model, there's a distribution model, a responsibility model, a timing model, and a motivation model. I'm going to talk about one model today. That's the only one I've completed, is the stage gate model. That's the systems development life cycle. That's the WEN model, all right? So the other ones I've not done yet. The data model is not done yet, and I've got kind of a short description on this. The process model is not done yet. Everybody's using Agile or using RUP or using, they don't know what that means, and we have all kinds of different ways of doing it, and that's our process. I haven't defined that yet. The distribution model, you saw a little glimpse of that when we said, is something shared? Is it bespoke or is it unique to the agency? I mean, bespoke or utility. So we're kind of defining that, but I haven't defined everything around that yet. The responsibility model, who does what? Who's, you know, that we're going through all kinds of discussions about what's the difference between governance and oversight? What's the difference between what's procurement's role? What's the role of the state data center? What's the role of my office? What's the role of the agency? So that responsibility model is being fleshed out as we speak. And then the motivational model, that's also being defined by you. There will be a legislative concept that's going to come along here soon that we understand is going to help define some of that as well. So we've got all kinds of things in the hopper right now. And the reason I wanted to demonstrate this model and show this to you is because there's a lot more work to be done. So, and to give you some idea or some framework is to understand both what I'm presenting today, which is going to be a lot of stuff around the timing model, the systems development lifecycle, and then kind of give you an idea of what I'm hoping to get done in the next 2 years. All right? So I hope that's not too confusing. And I'm sorry if it is. This is a tough thing to – people spend years going through. I have a 16-hour class I'm teaching at Willamette on this topic, you know. So I'm sorry if I've gone through this really quickly in 5 minutes. But all right, so our expected results, implementation of the IT governance framework to increase enterprise and IT compliance, reduce duplication, align technology solutions to needs, and streamline portfolio management. That's really what we're those are the outcomes we expect. And we are going to be developing metrics around how we can tell whether we're being successful or unsuccessful. So that's an important piece. All right, now, to get into a piece of detail here really quick, and it's really that bold one there that I want to point out at the bottom, the eligible for retirement in 5 years one. So we got a lot of about 30% of the workforce. One of the things that was interesting we had at a previous when this was the JCLA IMT committee, Oregon State Police had presented that their message switch person that had maintained it had recently died, and that they didn't have anyone else to do the message switch. That's really tough to contract with people when they die on you. So that is a core problem that the state of Oregon faces, is a lot of our systems are being maintained by people that are either coming to the end of retirement or further. So we have a real need to go through this process. This is a real problem for us, is how to figure out how are we going right now. What we have is not sustainable, and so just from the workforce statistics alone, you can see that what IT, just like electricity, is primarily a service. We're already a product. We sometimes think of ourselves as a product, but we're really a service. This speaks directly to that. This speaks directly to our viability as a service. Okay. All right. Now we're going to start getting into stuff around the business projects. When we call them business projects with a major IT component. I don't really like talking about IT projects. I like talking about business projects because, getting back to something Michael had said, the business needs to lead. These really are business projects, and there is an IT element to it. There's something that we do that's important, but that doesn't mean it's an IT project. You know, we're not doing IT in Oregon for the sake of IT. We do it for the sake of the business. All right. So as you can see, we've had quarterly reports here starting from February 2013, 20 projects, 16, 17, 16. So it hovers right around 2023. Current investment values range from approximately $1.3 million to $229 million. And the number of projects with a major IT component under QA oversight will expand following the upcoming QA policy adoption. More on that later. Additional resources and spending authority will be required. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, and I actually have this slide in this deck twice because I wasn't sure if I was going to, I'm not going to get to everything today. So when I come back, I'll bring this one up again. So don't worry about it. But I did want to use that as a setup for the CIO LFO stage gate review process and what we set up together. So that kind of gives you a context of what the volume is of this stuff going through. So. Is there any questions I have before I jump into this?
Go ahead.
Just a short comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reassured that there's someone there with a handle on the whole picture and also the list of the big projects. Some of us also, though, have noticed that there's just a whole lot of small stuff everywhere that also seems like it's just kind of, oh, things happen willy-nilly. I think setting the example for how we handle big stuff and how we might be changing our corporate culture, if you will, on how we think about these things over time, it should then permeate the line of business regardless of size of project.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathanson, your concern is a real one, and it's ours also. And if you'll remember from a couple of sessions ago, Representative Vega Peterson had the same concern about small agencies and did they have the support? Could they actually pull off their projects and do the work? Out of that discussion really came the architecture for the strategic technology officers, because they can act as first consultant and helping defining business problem and trying to define solution, and then also elevating when it was necessary to change that. And one of the, you remember the Hackett data, of a proliferation of applications in our organization, where it, as of the end of 12, we were at 2,814. That was about 50% more than our peer states and double what world-class organizations sustain. And so we just haven't done a good job of curtailing the proliferation of application development, particularly at the edges of our organization. And so that's one of the roles of the strategic technology offices.
Mr. Chair, when we were hearing earlier about shadow systems, I wonder if that's what we fondly and readily acknowledged in other places where I've worked, which is the workarounds, because
yes,
it, meaning
absolutely,
the system won't do
right
what you want, so we just always called it the workaround. Well,
yeah,
they won't do it, so we'll make up our own solution.
Yeah, and if you have programmers in your staff, you can make a solution on the computer. So
Well, and you can rent them too. I mean, you know, you don't even necessarily have to have the programmers anymore. So much of it is becoming on demand, you know. So we have IT as a service, we have software as a service, platform as a service, so infrastructure as a service. You have all these different things. You can stand up your own IT department just across the internet anymore. You know, you don't even need to have the folks in your group. You just go get them. So that is a real challenge for us. All right, so this is the stage gate model. This is the systems development life cycle. This is the timing model. That's what we're going to talk about right now. And the point of this was, I was asked at a previous committee, was this going to prevent failure for projects in the state of Oregon? The answer is no. It means I'm going to fail faster and I'm going to fail smaller. All right, that's what this means. IT is a discipline of failure. We do things and it doesn't work, and we try something else and it doesn't work, and we try something else and it doesn't work, and then when we get it right, we stop doing it. You know, we go on to the next problem. That's what we do. It doesn't matter if we're programming or if we're architecting a network or if we're building a server or whatever we're doing, we do it over and over again, iteratively, until we get it right. That's just our discipline. That's what we do. This whole thing is about how do we increase the cycle time, bring transparency to the process, and make sure that we stay, that what we're doing is still worth what we're trying to accomplish. Is what we've got going on worth? So many projects go dark, or we haven't been able to see where they are. We haven't had a process for doing it. In Oklahoma, we did this. This was our stage gate process with cooperation from the LFO. A lot of cooperation, a lot of help from the LFO. We were able to go through and refine that and define that to a greater degree. So project inventory, portfolio review and validation, joint stage gate review process, active in-flight process, planned projects, on hold or closed completed projects, and then operational initiatives and activities, policy revision and alignment with legislative direction. That's what this is all about. So the governor asked me back February a year ago to gather information about all IT projects currently underway or being planned at each state agency by that Friday, by the end of the month. So we gave him a form. Tell me everything that's going on. At the time I was there, we had, I don't remember, 18 projects. Yeah. We're monitoring 18 projects. So we come back and we asked them to come back, we get 81 back. So I put out the APB. I got 18. I say, you know, it doesn't feel right. You know, just state this size. We're doing more in Oklahoma. I think Oregon's bigger in Oklahoma. It doesn't feel right. So we get back 81 projects. All right. So a lot of them are active plan, comprised of information gathered from multiple sources. This joint cross-branch review and analysis result in the refinement and segmentation of the portfolio into one of the following categories: proposed, and then into the stage gate scenario. So we're going to go through those next here in a minute. But as you can see, 32 active projects, 21 planned, 4 on hold, 1 closed, and 12 operational. So it's kind of a jump, you know. So it was a big, I don't know, it wasn't a big surprise to me on one hand, but on the other hand, it was a big surprise because it was, you know, heretofore unknown. So, you know. And again, a lot of that's because of how we defined projects and how we defined business activities that had a significant IT component to it. So a lot of that was just getting this exposure out there. IT-related biennial budget instructions, spreadsheet for all projects above $150,000, either in their base or as a policy option package.
Where are you going?
Working with enterprise ETS to, and then doing our POPs, business case for all projects greater than $1 million, IT investment review and approval policy, IT oversight and QA policy requirements, House Bill 4122, and other statutory requirements. So really what this amounts to is we understood, or it was understood, I understood what the intent of leadership, what I felt the intent of leadership was and what my role was supposed to be and what I was supposed to be doing and what needed to be done to bridge that gap between what the expectation was and where I was in time and space. So, all right, so this is what we came out with. You know, wow, huh? So we came out with this really busy slide. What you see here at a high level are the stages or the steps in the stage gate process. So we start off with a vision, we go through a core team, we develop a high-level project plan, and when I say high-level in Oklahoma, we meant what we call a 50% plus or minus plan. So more or less, this is what we think. We could be off by half, either way. But more or less, this is what we think it's going to take to do this project. And then you go forward, and then underneath it here, what you see underneath it are stages that we have. We have origination, initiation, and then planning, execution, monitoring, and closeout. Those are PMBOK stages, project management body of knowledge. And so what those are, and then underneath it, those little, the tiny words underneath it, those are the artifacts or the elements or the things we expect agencies to have as they get through these. Now, some of them they're going to have and some of them they're not going to have. But for projects over $1 million, they're going to have a lot of these things in there. For projects 150 to a million, maybe not so much. For things that are pure infrastructure, I'm upgrading a switch from the previous or a server or something. I'm not changing anything on it. I'm just upgrading the hardware. We're looking at a very different level of stuff, of scrutiny, of artifacts they got to produce for that. On the other hand, we're bringing in a new Magi Medicaid engine. Well, you know, we're probably going to be looking at a little more, probably want a little more documentation on that. So all of these represent different artifacts that are associated. Oh, I'm sorry, is there a question?
Yes.
Well, it's more like a smart aleck remark, but
okay.
just like
we did a lot of those before you got here.
On the opposite end of, wow, we're planning this thing, this really new fancy thing, well, we need to talk about it. I suppose you also have an eye out for someone says we're getting ready to order 50 rotary dial phones. That kind of thing. And you say, why are you doing that still, whatever it is?
Well, we try to. You know, there's a lot of times when running in place is the best option for some groups because of uncertainty. Other things that may, there may be an immediate business need for that. Now, we don't have anybody ordering rotary dial phones. But we do have things where we invest or further invest in technologies that are no longer or are shortly going to be unviable, you know, are not the best solution that we could go with. There are still good reasons to do that sometimes. It all depends upon the context of the organization situation and what it is we're doing exactly in that environment and how quickly we can move. So I wouldn't rule out that we don't ever do things that are, you know, we've had conversations. And the other thing is true is that the state of the art changes so much. One of the things that myself and some folks have been having a debate about is with In a previous committee meeting, I heard them talk about the ERP solutions, the enterprise resource planning solutions like SAP that are looked at, and you'll hear about the legacy system upgrade we're talking about. Well, one of the things that's available now, because so much software as a service is available, recent articles come out and say, well, if you want to be sure to bring in a multi-million-dollar fail project, buy an ERP and install it yourself, you know. So just the state of the art has changed, you know, and is constantly changing. And so it's very hard to be an expert on everything all the time. And there are lots of opinions on this. So it really comes down to the quality of the business case and the business need. The business has to drive the technology, not the other way around.
It's sort of like when I go to buy tires, I want to know if I'm going to buy the cheap ones because I'm going to sell my car next year, or if I'm going to buy the really good ones because I'm going to drive it for a while. Mm-hmm. It's the same. I think that's the
same
idea
analogy
we're looking at.
And there's a lot of flim-flam out there in tire land. So, you know, at least in my car, you know.
Well, go to Les Schwab.
Yeah, well, there you go. So there's no Les Schwab in IT, unfortunately. So, you know, we've found that it's been a lot more complicated than that were. But thank you for that point. All right, so getting back to this, I'm sorry to belabor this. So right up front, what we're proposing, that green dot, is an architectural assessment. Does it fit in overall with what we've got and what we're doing? Do we have something like it already? You know, somebody else is already running case management. You know, we just need to expand it for your needs or what have you. That's what that green dot's all about. Then they go through their core team, their high-level project, 50% plus or minus plan, bring it forward. And it's at that point that they receive their first endorsement, you know. So as we look at that thing, we say, yep, that looks like a good idea, or I don't know what the heck you're thinking about with us, you know. And so as we look at that, then we go through and say, all right, this is worthy of going forward to a detailed plan. And for very complicated projects, doing a detailed plan takes, you know, half a million bucks. It can take $1 million.
Tell me about stage endorsement. What does that consist of and who does it?
So that's right now what we call our IRR, Information Resource. Gosh, I can't think of
Well, that in your plan for future, who's going to be doing that task?
Well, that's going to be so there's two tasks that are really there. You don't see it. The green dot is the first one. Mm-hmm. That's going to be my architectural review body or whatever right. we call them. They're going to say whether or not this is really bespoke and they should go for it, or this is really something we already got and you're just going to eat we're going to all use the same one. So that one's kind of hidden. But this other one is going to be done is really the responsibility of the state CIO. Now, I'm going to do that in concert with the IT governance group. You know, that's going to be something that I do with the my hope is that this is something that's going to evolve. That's one of the things I say. We don't really have a way of presenting or a forum to present these right now to say, this is what I'm thinking about doing, and then getting... We're a very... In IT, as well as in business, we tend to be very good at self-policing or self-managing when given the opportunity. And if somebody's bringing something forward that's really not a good idea, well, you know, it pretty much gets killed by its own before it gets out. I'd really like to see that forum get further along, my IT governance group, to really develop further to where the business, when I did this in a previous life, each agency director or each and even prior to that, when I was with the city of Denton, each department director had to defend their own project. They had to present it, and they had to defend it. It wasn't IT's to defend or to present. We were just there like everybody else to say, man, that's a really stupid idea. You know, we weren't there to defend it or promote it because it was a shiny object. And that's a really important change.
To your question, the strategic technology offices will provide a lot of input to the architectural assessment piece. Mm-hmm. So, and that input will go both to Alex as kind of the chief staff, if you will, but that enterprise IT group, governance group, is the group that really evaluates these things at the different stages and makes recommendations basically to Alex, because he's accountable for moving these projects forward or not, but it puts more eyes on it. And I will be the first to admit, we're new at this. And we're trying to figure out how will it work when we really start getting projects that want to go through this. But I will tell you from my perspective, the reason there are business people on IT governance is because a lot of the questions here are business questions. They're not technology questions. Did you actually define your problem well enough and tell me how you did that? Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of scrutiny we're hoping to put into the process.
That's great. One of the other things that bothers me about this particular chart is that the business case is after the high-level project plan, and I don't quite get that.
Well, a lot of agencies, this gets back to something that Representative Nathanson had pointed out, a lot of organizations don't have the sophistication to develop a business plan. I mean, I know that's maybe something that's a little more bald than we're ready to deal with, but it's the truth. Yeah. And a business case or a business plan, how does what you're doing going to fulfill some outcome, some business purpose, some benefit? You know, so governance is about what good for which people at whose cost. You know, when you're going to go through and really define that and do it in a way that's defendable and do it to a quality that anyone can see and anyone, oh, I see why you're putting money into this. I get that. That's not a small task. And in a lot of cases, we just don't have that capacity within the agencies to do that. We just haven't got it. Asking someone to go through and do that, particularly a smaller board or a smaller agency to do that, what you're going to do is effectively, one of the findings from the Hackett Report is we don't use enough technology. You're going to end up making it so they can't bring a project forward.
Mr. Chairman, also, it really is, as Alex mentioned, this notion of failing quickly and at a low cost. So if they can't defend the high-level concept to a group of business and IT people, we're not going to spend what amounted to $2 million for the HRIS business plan. That was the level of investment to get to the business plan phase, to a level of detail that LFO and the state CIO were willing to move the project forward, and we haven't even really gotten all the way there yet. And so we really do want to give people a chance to get to their 50% level, you know, planning, and then say, okay, we're ready to invest something in a more detailed
right.
business plan.
Right. This box doesn't say business plan. It says business case. And in my world, I need a business case before I even start looking at a project, before I even start thinking that we need something. Why are you even looking? Why are you doing this common vision if you have no business case to solve? You got to have the business case, in my idea, is the problem.
In many cases, unfortunately, we don't start with the problem. We start with the solution in IT. I don't know. I can tell you that's my world. I'm not here to argue.
Let's stop doing that.
Well, I mean, we can say that, but in reality, that will never happen.
Okay.
I mean, we know that, right? We have vendors that
bring
solutions
there, yes.
all the time. Yes, sir. And so because of that, we almost... And there are some really good solutions out there that the state can and agencies can take advantage of. So to tell them that we're not going to do that is perhaps not the most optimal thing to do. It's okay to start with the solution and then work our way back to the. I'm good with that. It doesn't always have to be cooked up, you know. And I would rather it be more. I'm not trying to inhibit the process of improving. For some academic, you know, for some, you know what I mean. I mean, you know, it's really about trying to help them sustain and articulate better what it is they really want to do. I'm really here to coach them. I would submit to you. That's really my role is to coach them. So, all right, so that's a stage endorsement there. Then they go through their business case and their IRR, and they go through a detail. You know, they go through that, and they have their, we've got our solution, we've figured it out, whatever, and then we go into our detailed planning. And so that's the plus or minus 10% plan at that point. We know what this is going to cost, what the resources, internal and external, are, what it is we're going, what's the phases, and at least for phase one, for very complicated projects or programs, we won't get to a 10%, but by golly, we're going to know what phase one's going to be, and we're going to manage to that. To that plan. That's really when then they go through their endorsement and the gun goes off, and then we start this racetrack of running around of going through the execution of the project. And as every stage or milestone is accomplished, and we measure it against, you know, are they on time, are they on budget, have they had to change their scope? And if they haven't, then they keep going, and if they have, then we have to have a way of addressing that. And that's why you see that stage endorsement in there. That's going to be an iterative process. Because sometimes you get into a project and it doesn't meet a milestone, and you got to say, look, this thing's not going to, you know, we've obviously got a fundamental flaw in our design. We've got a fundamental structural problem with this. We need to stop it and back out and rethink this whole thing and suspend this thing and go on. That's why you see that stage gate in there. And that is that's what that gray box is supposed to represent as a racetrack. All right, and then on the back end of it, we got the process, the outcome metrics, the stage, the change governance, and the quality reviews, and the closeout there. So that's the high level process. So before I jump into the rest of this, is that, you know, and again, this was revolutionary for us here. You know, that we didn't have anything like this when I came in. So what I'm trying to do is bring structure to how we do things. And it's, you know, and I welcome the observations and the criticisms. Because it helps sharpen my thinking, and it helps me to explain what it is I'm doing. I'm not trying to interfere with things or suspend things. I'm trying to improve them. I'm trying to help the organization improve. That's really my goal. So, is this good? We good with this?
Did you want to ask a question to represent me?
Just a quick comment. After hearing all this, I'm reminded of something that I discussed with a few people back home in the district that I represent, which includes, it's Eugene, and mm-hmm. Eugene is where the University of Oregon is located. So there's a lot of discussion about academic issues, and at some point, I read an article, it could have been in a monthly alumni magazine or something. It was asking a business person, I think it probably surprised the reporter, something about how important is it to have a business degree and when you're recruiting. And the person responded, I'm not looking for a business degree at all. I can teach the skills, and I'm going to extrapolate here. You can teach a line of programming. Mm-hmm. You can teach something specific about the technology. This person said, what I'm looking for is someone who knows how to think, someone who can ask questions mm-hmm. and think through problems. We can teach the skills later. And I think, at first I was observing, this is so complicated and this is much. But what it is, I think it's showing us the organization is looking at a new way of thinking about how we do things.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's really correct. Thank you.
Representative Nearman.
Thank you, Chair Riley. So, Alex, I was just thinking, this process here, I hope you succeed, and I'm sure you will succeed, but I'll really be impressed when you fail and watching how you fail. That will really impress me. But I think you're realistic about that, so I have a lot of hope for you. So.
Well, thank you for that. We do. I've noticed this a lot, and I'm going to pontificate, but we do shy away from failure in the state a lot. We don't like failure. But that's really ultimately in IT. That's what we do. We recognize it. We expose it, and we learn from it, and then we do it a different way, and we keep doing it because what we do is so important that we can't that we can't come to the end we're trying to achieve. But it's all right to have things that you try and move off of that. So,
and as long as you admit that, I've seen projects that the ones that get in real trouble lie about where they are.
Yes, sir.
And as long as we're not lying about where we are and what's going wrong, we'll be okay.
I think you're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. It rolls off the lips pretty well. It's a significant culture shift for us, and it will take us practicing and trusting. And so when someone fails small and quick, nobody loses their head. We start and we correct and we keep going. And that's a culture shift for us. We're not used to working that way. So,
thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to go through three scenarios, and I know that this is very detailed, but it's important to understand linear time versus what you would call virtual time or whatever. You know, the stage gate has no absolute time associated with it. It can start at any point, it can end at any point, what have you. But there is an absolute time component to this, and I have my friends at the LFO to thank for pointing this out and making this correction. So what you see here is on the active projects. This was our first scenario we put together, and basically absolute time across the top, and at the time it was May of 2014, and then saying where we were, how we were assessing active projects and determining the project phase, assigning active projects to appropriate gates, conducting detailed reviews, establish project oversight conditions for future stage gates. So things that were already in flight, we didn't make all of them go back to the very beginning and pick out all of those different artifacts that they didn't have and say, you got to go back and recreate these. We took them as they were. Thank you for coming forward. Now, here's where you're at, we think, and this is what we need to do to shore this up or to, you know, whatever we need. Some cases, some things did not have a business case associated with it. So maybe they had one. Maybe it was in somebody's head, but they didn't have it reduced to writing. So we say, well, that's kind of important. You know, we need to know what it is so we know when we're done, you know. So we got to kind of reduce that to writing. Other ones didn't have other elements that were important to us. So what we did is we went through with each one of those and we said, this is the absolute time across the top. And we said, this is where we're at. And we're going to try to figure out where you are and what you need to do to identify or to address or to bring yourself up to where we're current with where you're at. And we couldn't bring them all the way back to the beginning. That just wasn't feasible to do, you know. So So that's first scenario. Second scenario there is the stage gate, the concept projects proposed during the biennium of execution. So that was that's the stuff that was proposed during the 2014 year before we get into this biennium. So stuff that had come forward. So for instance, the longitudinal data system from OEIB. You know, that was what really triggered this for us. You know, was this whole thing was their proposal. So how do we deal with things in between the bienniums, and how do we map what they're doing and what they need done in order in the process of the stage gate, you know, in the flight, you know, so that we're not imposing something and then causing everything to interrupt and suspend and get stuck on high center while we're instantiating this new process, you know. So that was very important, and we did that. And then the last one, I would submit to you, is the most important one, because this is the one we're in now. You see it starts there in March. This is really the concept project proposed during the biennium budget cycle. This is what we're proposing that we're going to use for POPs that have a major technology component associated with it. That this will be the timing cycle for those projects. All right. So they'll go through this. They got a business planning. They got a high level project plan, budget development, budget review and approval, detailed project planning. This all laid out what we're anticipating that will happen with projects POPs that have a major technology component that are proposed here. So for this biennium. So that's really the process that we've embraced together. So does that make sense? This is a major departure for us. I can't understate that. So, and I'm very proud of this. I don't get any credit for it, but I'm very proud of it.
I can tell.
I am. And I am. You know, and all of those, and one of the things we've been doing recently, we've been working very diligently on with the cooperation of the LFO and the members of the other CIOs and what have you, is the development of templates. You remember that first slide I had? So every one of those, well, every one of these artifacts here, these concept, project charter, project plan, every one of those is an artifact. We've developed templates, or we're in the process of developing templates for every one of those, so that agencies that are small or medium or folks that have capacity, they think they can do this themselves, they can start with a template and they can work off of that. And that will help them, we think, so they're not. It's not just a fetch a rock exercise, you know. It's not like, all right, well, give me a business plan. That's not big enough. That doesn't feel like an A. Go get me another business plan. You know, it actually says these are the elements you need to have in a business plan. These are the elements that we're looking for in a detail plan and what have you. So, all right, so this is the high-level plan, the detailed business case and foundational planning, the detailed planning and execution. So you can simplify it to those four stages, you know, if that's helpful at all. You know, it really comes down to those four things. That's all we're doing. Now, before I dump in it, these are the detail of what projects are in which stage. So before I jump into that real quick, are there any other questions about the relative time versus absolute time or any of that kind of stuff?
This is, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I am going to have to go through in detail, because you've got an awful lot.
Yes,
there,
sir.
Quite frankly. It's a lot of ground to cover. And some of it, it's obviously written in English, but the English syntax, but I'm not sure exactly what the meanings are. So I remember going over, trying to take a class in artificial intelligence at one time, and finding myself saying, well, it's written in English, but that's about it. I will be coming back to you again and again with the concerns in terms of the privacy and where this fits in here, the risk assessment to different groups. Issues that I'm concerned about, especially student who has that access, and how. And what happens if something goes wrong? So I appreciate that.
And the security piece.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have there's actually, like everything else, I have a framework for that.
Yes.
And I'll talk to you about that at future meetings.
At some other time, yeah.
It's going to take me some time. Excellent. So, you know, but are there anything else? Because, again, for projects, particularly for business projects with major IT component, I mean, this is really the This is really the cycle. This is how we envision these things are going to work themselves through starting next month. That this is how the cow eats the cabbage. All right, this is it. So it's very important to us.
I do have one question, just because of that. You mentioned that you would act as translator for Oklahoma. can you do that for me?
Cabbage.
Cow and cabbage, and there was also, as I recall, frog and conveyor belt. So.
That one I'm having a tough time with myself.
Thank you.
All right. So this is the listing of projects that have received, they're sitting in front of stage one endorsement. So these are all the projects that are out there. I'm not going to read them all off to you, but this is how we report. This is how we track them. When the PPM tool comes up, this will be visually available to you. All right. This will be something you can see at any time. And it's, oh, okay, here's the stage gate. Here's where we're at. This is what we're doing. This is where they are. And you'll see them as they work their way through the stage gate process. This is going to be part of our transparency stuff that we do, is that you can see. And when something moves along or doesn't move along, you'll know where it is in the thing. This is very important. And this is how, this is without a common language, as bad as I am perhaps in communicating, it's very important to establish a kind. That's really what I'm trying to do here, is establish a common language with the committee. So these are all the ones in that one. These are the ones that have passed the stage one. So capital assessment, MMIS, child support system modernization with DOJ, longitudinal LDS, software upgrade for health. So this is how I track projects. And if there's a question about that, and then any of these projects that are here, they have the associated artifacts that are going to be there with them. And so within the PPM tool, you'll be able to click on it. You'll also be able, if you want to see the business case, you can click on it and you'll be able to see the business case. There will be applied to it or attached to it those artifacts, those elements. Mm-hmm. All right? So that's my goal here. Okay? Projects with stage two endorsement. Call center upgrade, employment, performance reporting, let's see, software config management, individual account prog for PERS, FirstNet prep. So if there are any questions on any of these, I'm really flying now. You know, I'm going through the portfolio now. This is the important stuff, you know. Stage three endorsement. A lot of these were already in execution when we got here. All right. So when I arrived on the scene, these were already in flight. And like I say, some of these we've had to go back and we've had to say, well, we need this or that or something else because they didn't have that. So, but we've cured those. All right. Man, you're easy.
Project That's what stable. You think right now.
Yeah. Give them a little time.
Project with stage four endorsement? Only one. Just one right now.
With me. We'll go back to, if you don't mind, to the stage three endorsement.
Oh, yeah. All right.
There are several there that I am curious about because I'm hearing from folks that they would like to have the ability to talk with agencies, get a chance to talk with one another. Mm-hmm. Example, mm-hmm. The concerns about DHS. And cases versus how they might connect with the longitudinal data from the education division, and housing. Those are the kinds of things that I'm hearing about. And again, part of that comes to me, the concern regarding privacy and security, mm-hmm. because you know how much you can do with that, and how well you can triangulate an individual case with a student. That's a concern. This is just basically a heads up, so that's one of the things that I'm concerned about.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Frederick, you're bringing up an incredibly timely issue for us right now. You know, in many, many ways, in the last 4 years, the state's business model has changed. We are more and more thinking about moving human and capital resources much closer to the end user. Regionalization of the state, CCOs, early learning hubs, regional solutions. You pick the policy area, and the trend is for us to change our business model. Well, what does that mean for the business processes? And then what does it mean for the technology tool to support those business processes? And I think that's why you're hearing more and more and more this demand from different elements of a particular thing you're trying to do, like deliver a child ready to learn at age 5, the early learning hub role, right? Well, we've got probably 30 or 40 programs in 15 or 20 agencies that would have an element of efficacy in delivering that child. And they have a desire to be able to see data from multiple systems to try and get that more holistic view. Well, guess what? There's a risk and a tension associated with that. And we as a business have not worked our way through those questions yet. And we've got to do that before we hand it over to Alex and say, okay, here's our issue, build us a tool. And we haven't quite gotten to the business questions yet. So,
well, I would follow up. I would also contend that in many cases, we haven't asked the right questions. Mm-hmm. You were talking about basically having solutions and then
in search of a problem.
I have seen. I would contend that the some of the testing that we're using right now is a solution in search of a problem. Mm-hmm. It's not telling us what we really need to know. It is something that's available, and so it looks good as though it might tell us something, but it's not telling us. I mean, you'll have to pardon my rant, but it is not telling us whether kids like to read. It's telling us whether they can score in a particular set of tests.
Right.
I want to know whether they like to read.
Right.
That's my outcome. The indicator of whether they're getting a particular number on a test is not as important to me as whether they like to read. And if we are discouraging from reading by focusing so much on tests, that's a real problem.
So the thing that, Chair Riley, Chair Representative Nathanson, Representative Frederick, the thing I like to tell Mr. Jordan is if he would get his act together, my job would be a lot easier. So, you know, that's it. If the business could get their act together, it would just be so much. And that has been one of our struggles. But regardless of that, one of the other things that's true.
That's why I'm here, is to be the straight man.
That's right.
And his problem is us.
No.
So there you go. See?
There you go. But the other thing that's true is we do not have a strategic technology officer for education. And that has also been one of the limiting factors that we've struggled with from an IT perspective, is even being able to lend help on that side of it. Is we just don't have the capacity ourselves to even, you know, so we recognize that there's a deficiency. We don't have the capacity to help, and that's been a real challenge for us, unfortunately.
There are some parents who have been calling for just that for some time, and they are going to be very pleased to hear you say that.
So are you about to wrap up? Because we are about to wrap up.
Yep, this is a good time to break off. So this is a good time to break off. We can pick up here on Tuesday.
Okay, any last questions before we...
Thank you.
Then we are adjourned.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.